This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company that offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana, headquartered in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, I want to express my gratitude for Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Emily East. Emily grew up in Crowley in a musical family that always supported her love of dance. From the time she took her first dance class at 3 years old, she knew she had found her passion. After attending UL Lafayette, Emily moved to Las Vegas when she was 23, not knowing a soul or having a job lined up. After an entry-level job in Vegas, Emily was hired to dance with the Pussycat Dolls and eventually helped run the girl group and dance ensemble and served as their lead singer for a while. Emily has also performed as Cleopatra for Caesar's Palace and appeared on the Oprah Show in Chicago with Celine Dion to announce her new show at the Coliseum. She's danced on the Billboard Awards twice and performed at the Royal Albert Hall in London twice. Yet in 2012, Emily East realized that family was important and she yearned to return home. She moved close to New Orleans, where she had a small production company, acted on NCIS New Orleans for a couple of seasons, worked as a makeup artist and a dance teacher. In October 2017, Emily moved to Lafayette, where she's gotten very involved in the music scene. She started a songwriter series called The Listening Room at The Pearl that showcases songwriters in a respectful, quiet space where they can share their songs and tell their stories. She's also a dance teacher for Basin Arts, and I just learned a gymnastics teacher also. So Emily, I know your goal is to help make Lafayette a sustainable place for our creatives, and you've got quite a story to share. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited. I've got a special guest with me today. I brought Taylor, my daughter, because you're our connection. Yeah. I met you because you were supporting Taylor. Taylor's an artist.
Great artist.
And you've been supporting her and her, you know, endeavors to get her work out there. And I really wanted to let you tell your story because not only are you an artist, but you moved back home. You wanted to be home. You love Lafayette.
So
perfect guest for this show.
This is my favorite place. I've been around the world, and now I just know that this is where I want to be. I'm
That's
so
great.
Happy here, and you're not dragging me out of
That's
this
great.
City.
Well, let's talk about your upbringing. I saw a picture of you as a tiny little tot with your full regalia on, dancing. What happened? Were your parents were musical, right?
They
were
talented. My dad is a musician. My mom also played piano, and she's a great singer, but she's much more of the sit on the sidelines. Me and my dad are the watch me, you know, and my mom and my brother are just happy to cheer us on from the audience. But my mom put me in dance when I was three, and I just connected with it, and I loved it, and stuck with it through all my years, even whenever, you know, there was the rebellious years of like, this is hard, I don't want to do it anymore. And my mom's like, well, you started it, you're going to finish it. Like, you started the year, you're going to close it out. You know, if you don't want to go back next year, fine, but you're going to finish it, which was a really good thing, I think, for me. And what I always tell all of my students, like, it's a great lesson in life. If you start
really
something, finish it,
right.
You know? And then by the time a recital would come around, it's like, that was really fun. You get to wear makeup and the costumes and the lights and perform and the applause, you know. It makes you a ham from a very young age.
Yeah. Where did you train?
I trained at Core Dance Center in Crowley. And Crowley is a small town, but we were so lucky to have Miss Brenda Core. She's, I mean, so advanced and always has been. you know, for what a small town we were from. And
right. Is she still teaching?
She does still have, 30 years.
That's great.
They just celebrated like 2 years ago. I think it was 30 years she's been teaching. And Crowley's very lucky to have her.
Yeah, and you studied all kinds of dance.
I have. With her, I did ballet, tap, jazz, and then in high school, we started doing hip-hop, which was very strange for me because I was so trained in ballet, and I remember the hip-hop teacher, it was this girl named Sarah Neal who came from California. She's like, all right, everybody stand with your feet apart, turn your feet in, and shrug your shoulders down. And I was like, no.
Hello. Yeah.
My ballet
I'm
teacher
a ballerina.
Is right there. I don't know how to slouch. I'm sorry. I don't know how to do that. So, hip-hop was a little bit of a challenge for me. But my parents would take dance lessons at Dance Around the World with Miss Lou Dakota on Ridge Road. And they would do jitterbug and line dancing and country and western. And so I would go with them to all those classes.
Oh, so you know that too.
Yeah, and Miss Lou would use me as her partner, you know, for demonstration and stuff. And so I learned all kinds of stuff and then took it a step further. And then when I was in Vegas, I did Latin ballroom and trained with all of that. And
you could lead cotillion. You know, Taylor took that.
I'd love to have a teacher like you.
I know.
That'd be great.
I know. It'd be a lot of fun. That's great. So, okay, you graduated from high school. What high school did you go to?
Crowley High.
Crowley High. Went to UL for a while.
For a little while.
And then, tell me what happened. You decided you were restless, right?
I was trying to do the responsible thing, and I was like, what do adults do? Like, well, I don't know. I mean, 18, 19 years old. What do you know? Like, you don't know anything. And so I kept going to school, and I'd drop out. I'd go to school, I don't want to do this. I don't know what I want to do. And so I was like, I'm going to do dentistry. I'm going to be a dental hygienist because that's responsible. And I started working in a dentist office as an assistant, and I was like, yeah, I think I'd rather be dead. Like, I can't do this. It's way too structured, and there was no creativity, and it was just, you have to be super organized, and I'm just not that person, you know.
Well, you've got an artistic temperament, probably.
And I've always been a wild child, kind of free spirit, you know, and wanted to go and like, oh, there's a concert in Houston this weekend I want to go to. I got to take off work. And that just doesn't work whenever you're running a medical practice.
Right.
You need. So it just wasn't my thing. And so then I started bartending at the Plaza, if people in Lafayette remember the Plaza way back in the day. And I was making really good money. But I remember thinking, like, this isn't a long-term goal. I was 22 at the time, and I was like, this is just not, I'm not challenged. I knew everybody in Lafayette at the time. I could get a job anywhere I wanted. I was like, I feel like I'm just not fulfilling my potential. So I put a map out back. I had a big car map, you know, those books. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had that, and I put it out on my bed. I turned around, closed my eyes, and I was aiming for San Francisco, LA, or San Diego. But my finger landed in Nevada, and I was like, never been to Vegas, never thought of Vegas. So I went on Craigslist and found an apartment for $500 a month
in Vegas
with a roommate. I had never been there. I mean, it was like way up north, you know, it was like on the outskirts, but the price was right. And I lied to everyone. I said that I knew the person I was moving in with, and he was an old friend of mine.
You're talking about your family?
My family and my friends.
The people who worry. Yeah.
So they wouldn't worry, maybe.
So and because I said, well,
handcuff you.
I'm gonna pass this by and see who freaks out, you know. And I told my dad, and he was like, good. I think that's good. And I was like, oh, my mom's gonna lose it. So I was like, I think I'm moving to Vegas. And she was like, good. I think you can dance out there again, because I had stopped dancing. And
they probably were watching you being frustrated.
Yeah.
You know.
And she was like, I think that's really good. I was like, okay, they're not freaking out. I was like, oh, my friends are going to freak out. And I told my best friend, Robbie, and I was like, I'm going to move to Vegas. And he was like, awesome, man. I'm proud of you. I think that's a good move. And I was like, well, nobody's stopping me. I guess I have to go, you know. So I did.
You drove out there.
I actually booked a plane ticket. Mm-hmm. I flew on September 11th, and I got a flight for $99 and just took two duffel bags, a suitcase, and my guitar. And then a couple weeks later, my dad drove my car out to me.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, they really were supportive.
And, so I started over. I had an air mattress and, you know, a couple bags of clothes. And
that's about all you need, huh?
Yeah. I mean, at 23, what do you need, really?
Right.
You know?
Right.
You're much more resilient.
Yeah.
And your back doesn't hurt as
I was about
bad.
To say.
Well, I read you got a, we don't have to go into your opening job, because I know it was probably insulting. You got a job out there. And then you moved on to better things. So yes. If you want to talk about how yes. You ended up with the Pussycat Dolls.
Yes. Well, that, my first job, I had some bartending experience. Mm-hmm. I had a little dance experience. I didn't know what to do. I told my roommate, I was like, is there a coyote ugly out here? And he was like, yeah, but that's a union job. You're not union. You're never going to get that. And I was like, I'll try. Mm-hmm. It was 2 or 3 days after I moved to Vegas. And he was like, I mean, we can go check it out. So I went. And they were like, yeah, but you have to come, you do this paperwork. Because it was very corporately ran. Mm-hmm. You know, it was run by Peer Management Group and very, very, very corporate. So did that. Then they interview you. Then they make you audition live in front of a bar full of people.
Wow.
On the stage.
It's called Coyote Ugly.
Coyote Ugly. And I went, I did it. I got it. Somehow, whatever, and it was a great, I mean, it paid well. The girls were super mean. They were not nice. They were not welcoming. It was a very tense environment, but I was making great money, and I got a job on the Strip, you know, and that was so, I was happy.
Pay your bills.
Yeah, I was living very comfortably, but it was just kind of stressful, and then we had a manager come in from out of town, and she was kind of just trying to reassess everything and get everything more streamlined, and you know, she was very good with corporate bars and restaurants and stuff like that. And so she pulled me in the office one day and she was like, yeah, you're too good for this place. And I was like, please don't fire me. I don't have a backup. I don't have any family. She's like, I'm not firing you. She's like, but I talked to Robin Anton. I know that you love the show at Pure, the Pussycat Doll show. I'd seen it at Pure Nightclub. I was like, oh my God, it's so fun. It was just so cute. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the cutest show. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. I just mentioned it in passing. And she's like, I think you'd be a good fit for the dolls. So I'm sending you on an audition tomorrow. So I was like, oh my goodness, thank you. Like, that's amazing. And I thought it was a private audition.
Kind of set up for you.
Yeah, and it was a cattle call. There were at least 300 or more girls there just lined up. I walked up. I was like,
gosh.
Were they all like pretty? Like, was it just a sea of prettiness?
Yes, it was just some were dressed crazy, and you know, there's some that have no self awareness. Who it's like, girl, do you have any dance training? What are you doing here? You know, you see those at every audition, but it's just people chasing the dream, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was her absolute last choice,
but you made it.
I made it by the skin of my teeth, mm-hmm. and. I was just a swing. I got to fill in. Basically, when somebody called out sick, then they'd call uh-huh. me. You know, I did not have a permanent spot. And it was to open the Pussycat Doll Casino, which was in the front of the showroom in Caesar's Palace. And they had a pit around it where people play blackjack and, you know, roulette and all that stuff. So you kind of, you know, it was hard work. It was long hours, 5 hours a night, you know, 30 mm-hmm. minutes on, 30 minutes off. You know, you change costumes and go back out and dance. Gosh. I mean, it was really high energy and it was a lot of cardio. And I was in the best shape of my life mm-hmm. when I was doing that.
I saw some of those photos. Yeah. Beautiful costumes. Yeah,
they were great costumes. Uh-huh. I mean, you get to just be decorated in rhinestones every night. You know, it was really lovely.
Love
and
it.
Boas. And, you know, it's just dress up for a living. But when you're in it over and over for years, you're like, oh, God. But then I'd have to really go, you get to play dress up and dance for a mm-hmm. living. Mm-hmm. Snap out of it, you know? You're not pushing papers or sitting behind a desk all day. So I did that for a while. And I knew I wasn't one of Robin's favorites, but I was like, that's fine. I love this brand. I love what she's done. And I'm just going to keep proving my worth and showing up and doing the best I can, you mm-hmm. know? And then Matt Goss is a singer from London. He was in a huge boy band back in the 80s and 90s called Bross. And then he left the UK and moved to California. And he, you know, had his own little music career out there and then wanted to do a stage show. So Robin loved his music, and she's a dear friend of his. Mm-hmm. So she got him in at the Palms at... in the Pearl, actually, was the name of the room. I'm just putting that together. The Pearl at the Palms. And so she had auditions, open auditions. I didn't even go to the first one because I was like, she doesn't like me. I'm not going. Like, that's no point. She's not going to hire me. Mm-hmm. And then she wasn't really happy with the turnout or the girls that did show up, you know, since she's very particular when she has her idea of mm-hmm. a brand or what she wants, that's what she gets. So then she made it mandatory that everybody from Pussycat Dolls Casino and the show went and auditioned for a match show. So I went to that because it was required, and I didn't get picked. And I was like, well, I knew that was going to happen. You know, she was like, hey, Emily, it's good to see you. I was like, oh, you don't like me, whatever. Yeah, good to see you too. I still love what you're doing, though. You know, and you're my boss, so I respect you. Then they had a girl that got onto a basketball cheerleading team, like for one of the professional NBA mm-hmm. teams in Arizona. So she had to quit. They had hired their four girls, but she had to leave. So they had me and another girl, my friend Amber, go in and do a private audition. Well, they went
with Amber.
You finally
got it. Oh, really?
They went with Amber. So I was like, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, then they start rehearsals. And, but I still was like, you know, at least I got to get seen, and they know who I am. And, you know, I'm still employed with the dolls. So
which is great.
That's fine. And, they start rehearsals, and there was just one girl that Matt just didn't connect with, or he didn't feel like she was a fit, and he was like, I want that Emily girl. I want her. Call her. See if she can come in. So they call me. They're like, hey, can you come to rehearsal today? I was like, for what? They're like, just come down here. So I went, and they're like teaching me choreography. I was like, what's going on? And Haley, the girl that was running the rehearsal, she was like, you're in the show. Matt likes you, so we're going to put you in the show. I was like, I'm in the show. Okay, great, awesome. This is amazing.
Was that in lieu of then the Pussycat Dolls? Like, did you have to?
No, I still got
you still
to do
did both.
Both.
Oh my gosh!
Mm-hmm.
Talk about being in good shape.
Oh yeah. So we were doing Matt's show. It was just on Fridays and Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So I'd do that, and then I wasn't doing Dolls on because I was still in the pit at this point. I wasn't in the show, and so that. That was a really good experience for me to, you know, be part of that. And we had a live band, and you just bond with those people, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I love those people still to this day. And so I stay with Matt, and then Robin, the show at Caesars at Pure closes, and they're going to reopen at, it was very abrupt closure. I don't remember why. Or what happened, but they closed Pure Nightclub, and then they were opening a new nightclub at Planet Hollywood, and they had built a new Pussycat Doll Saloon.
Oh.
That was the name of the room inside mm-hmm. of this new nightclub at Planet Hollywood. And at this point, I was the dance captain of Matt's show. Robin was just letting me audition girls for the Pussycat Doll Casino. I was running that. You know, she's like, oh, Emily can run it. She knows what I like, you know.
So maybe she liked you more than you thought. Huh?
She ended up.
She respected
I was like,
you. Yeah.
That's my attitude. When people don't like me at first, I'm like, that's fine. You're going to love me. It's fine. Just wait. And that's usually how it happens. And I'm nice. And I work really hard and, you know. I'm going to prove my worth, and, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't want to see it, that's okay. That's totally fine. It's fine.
And I guess in your industry, you really have to be able to take rejection.
Oh,
because
definitely.
At some point, I mean, you couldn't survive.
No, it's
emotionally
not.
If you couldn't
yeah,
take
if you
it,
don't
you're
have
not picked
skin,
all the time.
It is not
yeah.
for you, because, I mean, I was talking about this with my book club a few weeks ago, to go on all these auditions, and you're essentially in underwear. You know, you're like in your sparkly bra and your sparkly underwear and your, you know, boots and learning choreography on the spot, and then they're just, you have a panel of people just looking you up and down and going, no, thank you.
Yeah, just,
and, you know, it's like,
don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Okay. I'll just go kill myself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've seen girls walk out of auditions just hysterical. I'm like,
must be new.
Like,
yeah.
You're rushed.
Oh, you're new here. Okay. It gets a lot worse before it gets better, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just something you have to learn to lose
right.
and win gracefully. You know?
I have a quick question. What is it like living in Las Vegas? I have visited there, and I saw good and bad. You know, mm-hmm. You just see kind of every element of life, don't you?
Vegas, living in Vegas is so weird.
Because people think about going just to get drunk and kind
yeah.
of, you know, go back
like,
home.
I could never survive in Vegas. I'm like, well, no, I mean, not if you party like that all the time, but I didn't, you know.
Right.
I was there to work. Mm-hmm. I was there to just see what I was made of and survive. And, you know, I mean, we got hair drug tested and, you know, like mm-hmm. you
had to be
yeah, you had
ready
to be
for work.
On. Yeah. And so Vegas is an entire city around the Strip. I had a church out there, you know, went to this amazing church called Central Christian, and there's grocery stores, there's schools, there's
really?
Neighborhoods.
There's the children are educated.
You know, after they party, yeah.
Not everybody is, you know, binge drinking in nightclubs all the time. Mm-hmm. There are nice little communities, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful city outside of the Strip.
Yeah.
And lovely neighborhoods and, you know, great shopping centers. Granted, the CVS has slot machines in it.
It does?
Oh, yes. In my neighborhood. You know, there was a time when I moved back that I had to acclimate to not hearing slot
machines. The sounds. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. And all the.
Did you gamble?
I've never gambled a day in my life. I've never to this day gambled a day.
Isn't that something? And there you are.
I think that's why, another reason I did so well, because I didn't have the temptation.
You had your bets with your, like, life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's where I put my gamble was, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd rather spend, if I'm going to lose $200, I'd rather it be on some nice shoes.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I want it to be something I can keep instead
of. Yeah, let's get real. I know.
Just throwing it away playing adult video games, basically, you mm-hmm. know?
That's
no
funny.
Thanks.
That's funny.
No.
So you really did well, though. I mean, talking about living there, I mean, you ended up, you played, you were Cleopatra.
Yeah.
At Caesar's Palace. You've met a lot of big stars.
I have. I actually got to meet Barbara Streisand.
Oh, my gosh.
When I was Cleopatra in her movie, The Guilt Trip with mm-hmm. Seth Rogen, mm-hmm. her and Seth Rogen. And I was in a scene, and Caesar's walking through with Caesar, you know, and ran into Seth Rogen, like, sorry, you know, and... But I had to start at her mark, and she was at a slot machine, and she looked at me, and she goes, oh, she's gorgeous, beautiful, and then just went back to what she was doing. It was like the most abrupt, aggressive compliment, and then being completely ignored. But I was like,
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Like, I was wearing this
That'll carry you.
Yeah. I'm like, Barbara Streisand said I was beautiful, so.
It must be so, yeah.
I mean, granted, I was wearing a giant Big Bird headpiece on my mm-hmm. head, and it was a Bob Mackie costume.
Oh wow.
Gosh. That costume. I sent you the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
That was designed by Bob Mackie, so.
Mm, the best.
Yeah, I did not have a rough life, you know. Yeah. It was nice to be able to play dress up in that caliber of costume.
And then Celine Dion.
She's amazing. She's the sweetest human being I've ever been around in my life. We went with her. It was me, Caesar, and the Centurions, and we went to announce her show mm-hmm. at Caesar's Palace. And she's hilarious. I mean, I didn't work for her personally. I wasn't in her show or anything like that, and I've only spent minimal time with her. But she was just so warm mm-hmm. and sweet and really, really funny. Like, she just... I remember one point we were lined up backstage in Harpo Studios waiting to go on, and she's standing, like, in front of all the Centurions. She goes... My heart will go on. My heart will go on. I was just like, what is happening? Like, it's so weird. But she was so cute and so sweet. And then she grabbed me. She was like, oh, like just shook me. I was like, okay. Yeah. This headpiece is 30 pounds. But sure, just shake me some more. No big deal. But it was Celine Dion. Like, what are you going to do? You know?
Yeah, just you love
let
it.
You let it.
You let it happen. Yeah. You know? It was amazing.
Do you speak French?
Just un petit peu.
Yeah, because I wondered, I guess she's fluent at this point.
She does speak French. Yeah, I think French is her
That's
first
her main
language,
yeah. But I mean, she's able, she speaks mm-hmm. fluently in English.
In English, yeah.
Yeah, but I was just curious. Maybe
she speaks to her children in French. I saw mm-hmm. her do that. And,
right.
Yeah, but she's just darling. I wish I could be friends with Celine Dion.
You're young. You got time.
I know.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll come to Lafayette,
Your
Louisiana.
Lips to God's ears.
Yeah.
So you got to travel quite a bit. I mean, you performed in the Royal Albert Hall in London. You got to travel. It must have been a dream.
It was. There was a lot of moments where I was like, okay, life is too good right now. I'm very scared, you know? It's that, like, wait, is this really happening? You know, because you work so hard and you're just, when you're in the daily grind of things, you're just going and mm-hmm. going and just trying to get through, you know, and it's really hard and it's really expensive and to survive and on your own. And granted, I did have a network that I ended up building. Mm-hmm. I was very, very lucky to find some of the most amazing people in Las
Good.
Vegas. And
yeah.
that becomes your family.
Yeah.
You know, you do holidays with these people. They take care of you when you're sick and you become family. I'm still in touch with them. And uh-huh. they're still the dearest friends I have. because you go through a lot out there.
Right.
But when you're in that daily grind, you forget like what the big picture is. And then whenever you get news, okay, well, we booked a show, we're going to be performing at Royal Albert Hall. I'm like, wait, like the Royal Albert Hall in London? They're like, yeah. Oh, okay. I'm not the nerd here. It's fine, you know. Everybody else is like, oh yeah, because I have to remember too the caliber of performers that I was on stage with. They've done this, you know. They were all Disney characters, or they were on cruise ships going around the world, or they've toured with Janet Jackson or whoever, you know. They've all done really big things, bigger than what we were doing. So for them, it was just like, yeah, it's a gig. I'm like, no, this is huge. Like, this is amazing, you know? And I just soaked in every minute of it. I loved every second.
And you were so young, you know?
I was 25, 26 at the time. And I just remember, I mean, I'm a huge music fan, big, you know, buff, and love all that stuff. And just sitting, I remember, you know, backstage is a little lower, you know, you're gonna have to go down some steps, and it's in a basement, and just walking those halls and getting in those dressing rooms and going, the Beatles have gotten ready back here, and Led Zeppelin has gotten ready back here, and every huge name has performed on that stage, you know, and just sitting. I would like to separate myself from the other girls and the rest of the cast sometimes, and I'd go sit in the spot from wherever we were in whatever venue and just take a moment and just kind of meditate on it and just like soak it in, you know?
Appreciate it. Yeah. But you know, Emily, I'm listening to this and I love the story. And we've had many people on this show talk about they've gotten to do great things and they love home.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And what happened? Like you, it was back in, I guess, 2012, from what you tell me, you could have stayed, you could still be out in Vegas.
I could. Yeah. I really could. And there was a few times I almost went back because I had some offers and people were like, we just want you here and, you know, we need you. And
but you wanted to be closer to your family?
There was just something about Acadiana in particular. Because when I was in Vegas, I was like, well, if I can get this car, I'll be happy. If I can get this job, I'll be happy. If I can get this house, I'll be content, you know?
Is it ever enough?
It never was, because I knew that whenever, it's like I'd put on Pandora and I'd put on Occasion Station, I would just bawl my eyes out. And it was just, my chest physically hurt. I just ached, you know? And I mean, I have godchildren here and I was missing out on so much, you know? And my grandmothers were getting older and they was just, it was just, my heart was so torn because I was living my dream and yet all I could think about was home.
Yeah.
And I loved, and I mean, I was headlining a show on the Strip, you know? I was at the top of my game. I got to the point where, because I was doing modeling too, and if my agent called and was like, hey, do you want to do this gig? They want you to go on a go-see. I'm like, they have my stuff. I'm not going on a go-see. I don't leave for less than $300. Like, you know, I just went to I got to the point where I had worked really, really hard to establish myself, and people knew who I was, and I had really good agents, you know, doing good work for me, and I still wanted to come home.
Yeah.
I still just wanted to be here.
I think your parents were smart. They let you go free, like a little bird, and you know, that's the best way to love.
Yeah.
To give you your freedom.
They know that.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows me knows that you just got to let me do what I'm going to do, because I'm going to do it either way.
Yeah. Yeah. So you moved, not first to Lafayette, but you moved to New Orleans in 2012, and then you had some good experiences there also.
I moved to New Orleans because I was like, well, I can't go from Vegas to Lafayette. I thought that I needed like a little drop down into second gear type of thing, you know. So I went to New Orleans because I was like, oh, I like New Orleans. Like, it's a cool city, you know. And I spent 6 years there, and I just never could connect. I tried. I was like, what's wrong with me? Everybody's like, oh, you moved, you know, New Orleans. I moved here from wherever, and like, this is my home now, and this city is me. And I was just like, I like Lafayette better. Like, I like New Orleans, it's fine. I never loved New Orleans, but I did have some really good experiences there. You know, I met my dear friend Eli. She moved from New York, and we ended up starting a small production company together. We were working on a documentary in the Dominican Republic and Haiti through that. And then, you know, we would do like wedding videos and music videos and different promotional things mm-hmm. for people. And I learned a lot with that business. I learned how to fail too, because it was, you know, it was hard.
And that was more business than you had been probably
involved
in.
Right, yeah. To run it. Mm-hmm. I did service industry. I worked as a makeup artist. You know, I mean, I fell in love. I was in a long-term relationship with, you know, my now ex-fiance, but we're still very dear friends. And I learned a lot about mm-hmm. how to, you know, be a woman and, you know, be in a relationship. And, you know, he was a very successful restaurateur, and how to just be part of the New Orleans scene, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm glad I got to see that part of it, and I'm glad I got to experience the things I did. And I got to be on NCIS New Orleans, which was incredible. Joseph Zolfo called one day. He was one of the executive producers, and he said, "We're doing an episode that has a burlesque element, and I really would like you to come in and talk with me and Jim Heyman and consult on this episode." I was like, "Absolutely, I would love to." So I went in, we talked, and the more they're talking, they're like, "Okay, well, maybe you can choreograph some stuff for this scene, you know?" And I was like, "Yeah, definitely." Like, "Well, we're going to get you to dance in it." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool. I'll help cast dancers, you know? Yeah, we need you to find some dancers for us." Cool. Got it. Me and this amazing, the queen, Trixie Minx. She's like the queen of the burlesque.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does she go the whole way? Like, is it?
Yes. Yeah. She's like a real burlesque performer. Uh-huh. She is
not just her gloves come off.
Not just her gloves and corset. No, she goes for it, and she is hilarious and so talented. And, I mean, she's a brilliant dancer. But she and I were the consultants, and we ended up casting the crew for that scene, for that episode. And then Joseph was like, "Yeah, we really like you, so the writers are going to write in a couple lines for you." And I was like, "Okay, great." You know, so I got to have a speaking part, and now I'm a SAG actor, and, you know, that was a fun episode to do. That was really fun. It was hot. Oh, God, we shot one scene, the opening scene of it, in the middle of August with these corsets and these wigs and these boas and, you know, over and over and over again. But it was great. But it was in Jackson Square, you know. Yeah. Oh, it's very hot. But then we shot another scene on the soundstage, and that was really fun, great experience.
Was TV a lot different from your experience in Vegas?
It was. And, I mean, I had worked on some television and some movies, mm-hmm. you know, in Vegas, done a lot of commercial shoots and things like that. So I did have a grasp on it. But, yeah, this was a lot more involved. Mm-hmm. But I'm really glad I had that experience. And then because of my dance background, they kept me on as a stunt person. They said, like, Joseph was like, "I know you don't have any stunt training, but we have an amazing stunt team, and I really want to put you in touch with these people, Jonathan and Heather." It's a married couple that do all of their, that lead up their stunts, and they're unreal. They've done, you know, all kinds mm-hmm. of movies and TV shows, uh-huh. and they're real pros. So I got to learn, you know, a lot from them, and started taking kung fu classes and learning some stuff. And
that is cool.
Yeah, so I got to work. I mean, I didn't ever get to do any, like, really cool stunts. I never got to fall off a building or do any real fight scenes. But
jump out of a plane.
Yeah, I got to do a few things, you know, and I got to work on two different seasons. And, you know, just that whole crew, man, they're amazing. That's some good people.
Who's the main actor, Scott?
Scott Bakula.
Yes, he, yeah. Did you get to
I got to interact with him, and he's so
he's cute.
Awesome. Yeah, he's so very, very kind, very sweet, you know. And, Jim Heyman, he's married to Annie Potts, and mm-hmm. he's, you know, award-winning
designing
director.
Women. Yeah.
Yes. And she's wonderful, and he's so sweet. You know, they would come into the restaurants, my ex-fiance's restaurants, and they'd be like, "Emily, hey!" Like, they were so sweet to me. I'm like, I'm just, like, background on your show. And they were so warm and welcoming, and, you know. Mm-hmm. I had some really good experiences with stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, let's fast forward to 2017. You made the move back to be closer to your family. So you moved to Lafayette.
That was a tough call. That was really hard. But I just knew that it wasn't working. You know, mm-hmm. our relationship was, like I said, I love that man. I'm never going to not love him. I love him to death. We're still very close friends. His whole life is New Orleans. Mm-hmm. My life will never be New Orleans, mm-hmm. you know, and it just came to a head, and it was, I can't imagine raising a child out there, or, you know, I want my babies here. I want my family around, and my heart ached too bad for Cajun country. Right. You can take the girl out of Cajun country, can't take the Cajun country out the girl, so.
Well, it seems like I met you not long after you moved here, and again, mm-hmm. you know, my daughter Taylor's here, and I know she's going to have some questions for you in a minute, but you mm-hmm. you support our local artists. And when I met you, you were, you know, I guess helping performing artists, singers and
visual artists.
Yeah. But you want to talk about what you're doing today? And, you know, you've got a very full life here. You're involved in so many things.
Yes. I've bitten off a lot more than sometimes I feel like I can mm-hmm. chew, but that's just my personality. I'm like, I just say yes until I can't say yes anymore, you know? So I sleep when I'm dead, I guess. That's the motto.
Let's talk about the respect for artists, though. I know I've heard that from other singers and mm-hmm. songwriters, that a lot of times people think everything's free because of our free festivals, and also they don't always pay attention when artists are performing.
That's the plus side of being raised by a musician, was whenever my dad would take me to an open mic night or songwriter's night or, you know, concerts, my mom was really good about that, too. It's like, when you're on stage, you want people to pay attention to you, mm-hmm. right? Well, sit and listen. And then, you know, what I tell people is, you don't know, maybe you'll find your new favorite song. And it could be from a local artist, you know? And then every local artist, every big band started out as a local band. Mm-hmm. And it's our job to support that, especially from such a creative city like Lafayette. We're very lucky to have the musical influence that we do, whether it's from the Cajun and Zydeco side of things or our singer-songwriters. We have a great rock scene here. You know, we're very fortunate. And I just want people to start going to shows and paying attention, mm-hmm. especially in a singer-songwriter format, you know, because these people are bearing their souls. They're sharing their life experiences with you. They're telling their stories. Give them the respect. Mm-hmm. Listen. You know, and if you don't like it, okay, then you can go. But just come, sit down, and let yourself be immersed in an experience instead of distracted by your phone or having a conversation with someone else. There's plenty of time for that. This is their time. Mm-hmm. Let's give it to them, you know?
And that's what you're doing. The listening room, you started at the Pearl. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about that, when that is, and some of the acts you've had in there.
The Pearl is a great new venue.
Where is that?
It's downtown, mm-hmm. 222 Jefferson mm-hmm. Street, across from the Green Room. And the owners are from New Orleans, and they wanted to come to Lafayette.
You brought New Orleans with you.
They follow me everywhere I go. But they're awesome. They're really great. And they want to help the musicians here, and they wanted to have a really good music venue. You know, our capacity is over 500 people, so we can fit the bigger acts.
That's huge.
It is. I mean, and the sound we have, maybe I'm a little biased, but we have the best sound guys in Lafayette.
Next to Jason here.
Hang on a second.
Well, we have Mike Jones, who, you know, he. Sorry, I just hit your mic. Mike Jones, who owned a sound engineer school in Arizona for a long time. You know, so he really knows his stuff. And then we have Eddie Mapp, who is a dear friend of mine, oddly enough, who I met in Vegas years ago. Because he was on tour with Papa Roach, and those are friends of mine. And that's how I met him. And he's toured with Papa Roach, Evanescence, Christina Aguilera. I mean, he's done, you know, he's around the gamut. Like, he knows his stuff, mm-hmm. and these guys are not only really talented, but they're very kind, and they're very good to our musicians, and they, you know, they're very dialed in and involved mm-hmm. in the whole show, and which is kind of hard to find in a lot of sound guys, I find. You know, they're like, preset the board and walk away, you know?
Jason's like,
So we're very fortunate to have such great sound guys and wonderful owners, and everybody that works there is, you know, very invested in Lafayette music scene as well. So I think we have a really good team, and I'm really happy that they asked me to come on board. And that's why I started the listening room at the Pearl, because I thought that was a really good fit for the message I'm trying to portray and what I'm trying to do for the scene.
So that's on most Thursdays?
Most Thursdays. I don't have one this Thursday because I have a lot this week going on. I have the Good Dudes. They have their album release on Friday at the ACA, and I'm going to be stage managing that. So I just, you know, we have a lot of work to do this week. So, but next week I come back with Michael Juan Nunez.
So people will come on Thursdays, and you have the artists there, and they not only perform, but they share their story.
Yeah, they will perform some of their songs, and you know, maybe tell the story of how they wrote it. Mm-hmm. And I really encourage that. I want them to tell me their inspiration, tell us about why you wrote this or what triggered it. And because I do a little video interview with them for Brandon.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook. Yeah, I'm sure you
have it
other
places.
Them
something to put out, you know, so people can get to know them a little bit better. And so they can, you know, maybe inspire other songwriters into how they get it done and how they find inspiration. And, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, I don't look at other people as competition, and I don't think other people should either, because we're all unique and different.
Right.
But, you know, we should be helping each other to grow into the artists or songwriters or mothers or business people that we want to be, you know, and if we do it together, it's a lot easier that way.
So you're not only a producer, but you're still, I mean, I don't know that you're dancing professionally, but you're also starting to teach again.
I am. I'm starting tomorrow. I'm starting back with a heels class, you know, taking it back to
talk about that.
All roots.
Yeah, so you're getting people dance in their high heels?
They can, and if you're not comfortable in heels, that's fine too. But the whole class, it's kind of sexy, because my whole purpose for creating this and the way I designed it was I want women to come in and just stand in their power, you know, their feminine energy. And you know, a lot of women, especially these days, women work and have multiple careers or families, and you're not so-and-so's wife, you're not so-and-so's mom. You're in that hour, you are you, and you are a sexy woman, and you get to just feel yourself, you know?
People, do they get it? Like, do they relax and just
go
with it?
They do. I've had women come into my class, and at first they're like, oh my God, I can't do that. Like, they feel really, I'm like, girl, no one cares. Like, this is
get
where you let
it.
Your hair down. Like, just, this is a judge-free zone, you know? You come in and you just feel yourself, you
all
know?
All ages, Emily? Like,
all ages.
Like, even... Like,
well, I try to make it, like, at least 18.
No, but I mean, like, they go the upper end of the scale.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it's a you know, beginner level, so... Mm-hmm.
What do you teach? Like, what type of dancing with heels?
It's kind of like burlesque-inspired.
Oh. Really?
It's sexy, you know, and nothing too complicated. Whenever I feel like they can handle a little bit more, I'll adjust it and maybe make it a little more difficult. But for the most part, it's pretty easy, you know, and I take it very slow. And this is just about getting a good workout, feeling beautiful, and feeling empowered.
That's so this is going to be the Basin Arts
Basin
at Claire
Arts.
Cook's.
Wednesday evenings, I start at 8:15 to 9:15.
That's a great venue.
It is, and Claire is so awesome.
She is. Yeah.
She's a wonderful woman. She's doing so much for the creative community. So we need more people like her.
Yeah. And you're also going to be teaching gymnastics to little people?
I teach gymnastics Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at Hangtime TNT. Yeah, I have 15 months to 5 years old.
15 months?
Yeah.
What do they do?
You'd be surprised.
I would be. I mean, 15 months.
They're pretty flexible.
You know, they're very
flexible.
We waited
till you were three to get you into some behind the curve
we do,
Taylor.
They do parent-taught classes. So
so the mom's there, or the dad, I guess.
Mom or dad, and they come, and, you know, at that age, they don't have any, insecurity.
Like, no, they're none.
Not, they're
just, like, getting with
and
it.
And they're very flexible, and they fall and they're like, I'm not embarrassed. You know,
still developing their little kneecaps.
They can probably do splits without a problem.
Right. And so we do,
that's funny.
We do some stuff teaching them, you know, it's good for hand eye coordination, and they do front rolls and we do balance
front
beam
rolls.
And, you know, they do strong arms on the bar and, you know, it's very good for cognitive development.
And they
know?
Listen like they
do for the most part. Yeah. And it teaches them structure and waiting your turn, because then we go on the trampoline and teach them
that.
Some stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're learning some coordination, and it's really good for them. And
that must be precious.
Oh, God. They melt me. I mean, I was talking to my friend about it the other day, and I was like, I don't think I'm biased, but I think all the kids in all my classes are the cutest children to ever exist.
Probably like, so.
They are so precious.
Until the next class comes
Until
along.
The next class, I'm like, and y'all are the cutest things ever. And when they get excited to see me, like, Miss Emily, I'm like, oh, Miss Emily, I missed you. I'm like, I missed you too, sugar. You know, it's so, oh, they just, they make my heart so happy.
Gosh.
I love that job.
Now, I want to get into a question about men. Do many men take dance classes in our area?
I haven't had any to come and take my heels class. But,
oh, not the heels.
Oh,
I,
not
I mean,
the heels.
Just,
oh,
I mean, just overall. Do I
overall,
guess they could take the heel class?
Yes, they could.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, buy some bigger shoes.
Yeah. Or don't wear heels. Just come and if you want to be sassy, come be sassy with us.
Might be a good place for a guy to be.
I always encourage men to dance, and whether it's taking Cajun lessons or ballroom or jitterbug or whatever, I think it's great, because it's great for your brain as well. You know, it helps fight dementia, and it helps with all of these. There's so many health aspects to dance, you know, and it's a great source of like stress relief and just to go and
it's fun
to be able to dance to music. And then with couples, I always encourage them to take, because it's eye contact and it's you know, touching, and it's letting him lead, because it's the only place I'll let a man lead when he's on the dance floor. You know, I'm working on that, but it's really good for couples. And, you know, even if you're single and you want to meet some ladies, like, it's so attractive if a guy can dance.
Yeah,
I think that is like,
and it gives them confidence too.
Yeah,
to know what to do.
It's fun. Yeah. You know, I think it's great. I really encourage guys to dance. And then, you know, I know we have a bit of a controversy from, you know, the Good Morning America comment with Lara Spencer saying, making fun of Prince George taking ballet.
Oh.
But look,
Football players, they take ballet.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens.
And I was a professional dancer. I danced when I was 17. I got to dance with the Moscow Ballet with the Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. And those were the sexiest men I have ever seen in my life to this day.
So strong.
And then when I was a professional dancer in Vegas, the straight guys, they cleaned up. Okay. Like, there was lines of women waiting for those guys, you know? So men who dance are doing just fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else you wanted to mention before I turn the mic over to Taylor for a few minutes? You said you also, I don't know if you volunteer or work with Blue Monday.
Yeah, I do volunteer.
Why don't you hit on that briefly about what that is?
Me and John, we just, you know, it's like my, it's just you find your soulmates and friends sometimes, or, you know, just like souls, like Taylor's like my soul sister, you know, we just connected, you know, it's just how it happens. And he and I just have very much the same values, and we have very similar goals, and I just respect the sacrifices that he's made, him and his wife, Catherine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see.
And what is their goal, though, Blue Monday? It raises
the
money.
The Blue Monday mission, well, John has it's a nonprofit called Love of People, and he does a lot with, you know, feeding the community and raising money for, you know, needy families and diaper drives and all kinds of stuff that he has his hands in. But with specifically Blue Monday mission, he helps aging and elderly musicians with life care services. You know, people that have contributed so much to our culture, and they don't have 401ks.
No.
They don't have a retirement plan, but they are our culture. And they don't have a lot of times family to take care of them. They don't have children. They're touring their whole life, or, you know. So John steps up and provides life care services. He has a private healthcare company called mm-hmm. Quality Life Services, and he gives that to them, you know, through donations or through fundraising with right. Blue Monday Mission and the Blue Monday Jam on every second Monday at Rock and Bowl. And that goes right back into serving mm-hmm. our musicians, you know. Yeah. So his whole thing is...
He's a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy.
He's also running Upper Lafayette now.
He is, yeah.
The group he's I used to work with. Yeah, he's stuff. Got a lot going on. But yeah. I wanted you to get that in about Blue Monday.
Yeah, he's so. Awesome. And that's a good cause. So y'all go every second Monday at Rock and Bowl. It's always an amazing show. Mm-hmm. And now they do have a website that you can also donate on, you know, if you feel compelled to help with cost.
People bowl while they're performing on the stage there?
Oh, yeah. There's bowling going on, but, I mean, the dance floor is always packed. Yeah. And you, I mean,
that's a cool
Mr.
place.
Warren Storm has gotten up the last two. You're going to see legends, you know? Well, I mean, we got Lee Alanzino as the house bass player, you know. This man has toured with Buckwheat Zydeco, and he's just been on so many tracks. I mean, legendary. Mm-hmm. We have Mr. Ronnie Eads playing sax, who was part of the Muscle Shoals sax, you know, horn section. Mm-hmm. He's been, we were talking to him the other day, and he was like on Aretha's and Etta James and all these huge mm-hmm. tracks that he's like, yeah, I get a royalty check. I don't even know what the song's for. And then I have to look it up. And to be on that many legendary recordings, yeah, you know.
That's so cool.
I would definitely suggest people go. It's my favorite Monday. It's my mm-hmm. favorite night of the month, really.
That's great.
Yeah. So y'all come out and check that out and help John Williams and what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, Taylor, I want to, you had some questions I know that you were encouraging me to ask, and I
wanted you to ask them. Yeah, late night ramblings, just thinking. I guess it's kind of a basic question, but what do you think is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, I just did a Aileen Bennett's BU article, and she had asked me that. Uh-huh. And so I think the best piece of advice, I got it recently. This is one of them. My friend Sheila, she was talking about the struggles of an empath, and, mm-hmm. you know, she's like, but you just got to keep putting yourself out there and love, like, you get tired, but love is an action verb. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you gotta keep doing it and just keep putting yourself out there. And
it's beautiful
with what John does, with what I'm doing. It's like you want to try to help people because you see the bigger picture and you want to push people to reach their potential, but a lot of time it goes unthanked or unpaid majority of the time, or you come out of pocket a lot of the time, you know, and it's hard and it's a struggle, but you know why you're doing it at the end of the day, and you got to just keep pushing. You rest and then you get back and you do it again, mm-hmm. you know.
I guess whenever I think of you, it's just you have so much going for you, and you're the most unassuming person I've ever met. Like, you just it's like, I feel like you know how great you are, but you never make a big deal about anything. You're always striving for, like, better. You're always appreciating, like, the little things, like you say. Like, you never want to be like, oh, well, I mean, this is no big deal. I do this all the time. So I guess I just wonder, like, I mean, what do you think is next for you? Can you even, like, think too many levels ahead? Or is it just right next. Now?
Yeah, right now I'm just in the thick of so many things that I'm like, okay, let me get through this week.
Yeah.
And then the weeks fly by.
And the weeks, oh man, what do they say? The days go slow, but the years fly by.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
And it's true. And I can't believe we're at the end of August. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What happened? So I just know that I think I know that this is where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is just to keep chipping away at whatever I can do to mm-hmm. help sustain the music industry here and to keep building on it and to keep our creatives encouraged and making them feel valued mm-hmm. and making them understand that they are such a part of the fabric of this city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I can do that, that's my main goal.
Yeah, well, I think you're doing a pretty good job.
Thank you.
I guess one, just because you're surrounded by so much good music, if you're, like, it's a gorgeous day, you have, like, a long drive with the windows down, what are you going to be listening to?
Oh, man.
I know, easy question.
That's the thing. I have friends that are like, you know every lyric to every song. Like, you just change the channel and you know. I mean, I'll listen to anything from, I love blues. I love blues music. Always have since I was probably 18, 19. That's when I kind of got into it deep. I love singer-songwriter stuff. I'll even listen to, like, when I'm driving lately, because I hate the way people drive, and I get very ugly. It means I'll, like, put on K-Love. You know, I'm like, let me bring Jesus into this so he can keep me in check so I'm not flicking people off and yelling ugly things.
Hey, whatever it takes, you know.
But specifically, I love, like, Derek Savoy.
Right.
Right. I can't wait.
He was on
more.
One of your first listening rooms, wasn't
first.
He?
Yeah, he yeah. was the very first. I love Derek Savoy. He relaxes me. His music is so beautiful. It's thoughtful. His voice is just that of an angel. I love him. When I want to dance, I'm loving the Good Dudes. Their music is really, really fun. Mm-hmm. I love Jordan Thibodeau. He's one of my very best friends, but really revolutionary. I mean, just he's amazing with what he's doing with Cajun music. Mm. You know, he's really taking it to the next level. That'll get me pumped. I love driving and listening. I drive too fast when I listen to Jordan, though. Nakia, I don't know if y'all, she's kind of new, but she has a new album coming out, and I've heard a few of her originals, and she's having her album released at the Pearl coming up. Mm. But her music's really beautiful. I try lately to listen to more local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although, I mean, I still love, you know, all of my, you know, regular, you know, the stuff you find on
yeah.
Pandora or Spotify or
We've
whatever.
We've had fun to Lizzo before. Ooh, that was a pretty fun little drive.
Look, right now, Lizzo is my queen, okay?
Oh, like, Taylor turned me on to her, yeah.
Ooh,
you want to feel good about
Talk
yourself.
Talk about confidence, huh?
Yes, thank
beautiful.
You. She is like, I posted today on my story on Instagram. Lizzo. It's like, I've got to have more confidence. I cannot keep letting Lizzo down like this. And it's true. I'm like,
do it for her, yes.
Yeah. And she said it on her tiny desk. Like, if I can love myself, then you can love yourself. If you can love me, then you can love you, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think she has a really great message, but I love Lizzo. Yes.
I guess, I mean, I feel like you're so busy, but you do kind of have this air of, like, calmness also in a way. Is it just maybe the way you're raised or just that you've been through so much that you're like, well, I've kind of seen all the highs and now yeah. I'm, like, kind of, you can, like, bring yourself down, I guess? I
yeah,
mean,
I just have to, there's a lot of prayer that goes into that. Luckily, I was raised by such a faithful woman. My mom is, like, such a great example of, like, a Christian and, you know, she's such a good, like, a force in my life. And mm-hmm. And she's made it through some tough stuff and done it so gracefully, you know, and I don't do it half as gracefully as she does, but she's a huge inspiration. And I have to really, I have to take myself out of it because it's very easy to be a victim. And I do get that way sometimes. I do get very like, oh, why me? You know, but then I have to remember, like, I've been to some bates in the Dominican Republic and these sugar fields where these kids don't have clean water and they're grateful.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just thankful to have visitors or like food or, you know, things that it really makes me go, okay, snap out of it. You don't have it so bad.
Yeah.
You know? So I have to really just be grateful that I'm this tired and that I have so much. Because I look at it as, oh, it's a lot of responsibility, but to whom much is given, much will be required, you know?
Yeah, you're like Spider-Man. It's, you know, Well, yeah, I think that's pretty much most of what I have that I can think of course, now that I'm sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Jason always has a few.
Yeah, you stole my advice question, though. But no, that's fine. That was awesome. A couple comments, and then just a couple of simple questions, and we can wrap this up. First of all, much respect for dancers. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I've known professional dancers, touring dancers, and they give it their all every single night, single day. And then this has been an amazing interview, and I really, coming from Michigan to Hollywood, to just accepting gigs and then sometimes rejecting gigs, and now I'm in Lafayette and I built a podcast room. I have much appreciation for people like you who just jump in the river and see what happens and just see where it goes. And here you are now.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Where can people get more information about the listening room at the Pearl?
I do have a Facebook page. It's called The Listening Room at the Pearl.
Okay.
You can also find me on Facebook or Instagram, Emily Michelle East on Instagram, I-S-T-R-E. And then also my email is emily@thepearllafayette.com.
Okay. And then what about your dancing class?
That you can go to basinarts.com and check out their website. And my classes are every Wednesday from 8:15 to 9:15. And you can sign up online. You can also come and drop in and, you know, just check it out and pay there.
They awesome. Have
a front desk person.
Well, I have a couple of things to mention. We'll mention it off air. but thank you very much for being here. This has been very intriguing.
Thank you all for having me. This has been really fun.
This has been a great interview. And I love the dynamics. Yeah. I love the four of us here. Thank you so much, both to Jason and Taylor, for for being a part of this. And Emily East, thank you for making time. I'm so glad I'm getting to know you. And thank you for what you're doing for our community, for our creatives, and also just sharing your story about why Lafayette and South Louisiana is so special.
It's an honor, and I'm very happy to be, I call it South Best Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to put it. So I want to thank our listeners, too. We appreciate your support. Please subscribe. You can do this on iTunes, or if you have an Android phone, any phone you've got, there's an app. You can download your podcast app and go to Discover Lafayette, or you can go to our website, discoverlafayette.net. All of our interviews are there and show notes, and it's a great place to learn more about Lafayette and South Louisiana. Thank you for joining us. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.